WDIY Lehigh Valley Public Radio presents Lehigh Valley Discourse. Provocative, informative, and newsworthy, Lehigh Valley Discourse brings you the people and the issues that move and shape our region here on WDIY.
Welcome to Lehigh Valley Discourse here on WDIY 88.1 FM and WDIY.org. I'm John Pierce, your host. Working the board for us this evening is James Johnson, doing a wonderful job over there. And let me tell you, this is a red letter day for me with Lehigh Valley Discourse because my guest is a very interesting man whose name is Glenn Pierce. And Pierce, yes, he spells it the same way I do, P-E-A-R-C-E. There's a reason for that. He's my son. So Glenn, we are going to hear about many different adventures that he has had living throughout the world.
Thanks very much, John, and it's my pleasure to join you for this talk, for this conversation.
Glenn started off in life, well, born in Chicago, and therefore a lifelong Chicago Cubs fan, right, Glenn? Yes?
Yes.
Yes. First thing, you know, most important things first. When we moved to the Lehigh Valley in 1970, Glenn was 11 months old. So he grew up here, William Allen High School, and then went to college at Northwestern University, where he earned a Bachelor of Arts degree in economics, and then on to the University of New Mexico for a master's degree in urban and regional planning. From there, Glenn and his wife have moved around to, let's see if we can count all the countries. See if I get them all, Glenn. We're starting with Honduras, Washington, D.C. also, and then Honduras, Bolivia, Peru, Bangladesh, Kenya, and now Austria, Vienna, Austria, correct?
That's right.
All right, so we got them all. But that means that, and when I say that, they're not just going and visiting these countries, but they're living there for 3 to 5 years and then moving on. Glenn, why did you wind up having that kind of a life, several years in a place and then moving to another country? You were working with the World Bank. Is that their policy?
We had the good fortune of being able to identify different opportunities. Usually assignments go from 3, 5, or 7 years. Some of the countries where we've been the shortest amount of time has been 1 year, a little over 1 year, and certainly some countries 5 years that we've been. But it's been nice to see the differences as well as the similarities in Latin America, in Africa, in South Asia, and certainly now in Central Europe.
Yes, indeed. Now, your work, we want to talk about what you've been doing because you have been in countries, basically in countries that we consider developing countries, and you have been working especially recently with Sustainable Development Goals, or SDGs. So now our listeners know that. So what are sustainable development goals? What does that mean?
So the SDGs are an agreement that has been signed on to by, I would say, most countries in the world. And they are 17 different goals. This is all under the United Nations effort to identify what are the 17 sustainable development goals that each country should work towards. And SDGs, for example, that address education, SDGs that address food security, SDG that addresses sustainable energy, SDG on water and sanitation, SDG on urban development. And so these essentially provide a framework around which each country can strive towards those goals. Currently, I'm working very closely with SDG 7, which is sustainable energy. And SDG 7, to break it down even more, has several targets. One of those targets, which is increasingly important, is sustainable access to sustainable energy for all. And so this universal access to energy includes electricity, certainly, but also includes clean cooking. So it's amazing to think, especially sitting here in the Lehigh Valley, amazing to think how many people do not have access to electricity. About 800 million people in the world right now do not have access to electricity.
Wow.
And how many more people do not have access to clean cooking? Between 2.8 and 4 billion people in the world do not have access to clean cooking. So what exactly does that mean? That means that people are cooking indoors around open fires, having to deal with smoke inhalation on a daily basis, and not having the luxury of modern cooking technologies and clean fuels, essentially. So we do have to ask ourselves, why is it that we have so many people who still rely on dirty practices of cooking? And as a consequence, WHO estimates that about 4 million people die prematurely because of their lack of access to clean cooking.
Are you saying 4 million people a year?
A year.
Oh, my goodness.
Only because they do not have a better alternative to cook their nourishment.
Wow.
So these are the challenges that we work on. These are the challenges that each government in each country should be working on. And they require everything from policy reform to investment to private sector participation to new technologies to small and medium-sized enterprises contributing what they can contribute. Obviously, sustainable energy has a lot to do with increasing our use of renewable energy in our energy mix, as well as making sure that we are as energy efficient as possible. So much energy is wasted because of inefficient energy practices.
Now, we mentioned the World Bank, and you mentioned the United Nations. Is there a connection between the United Nations and the World Bank?
So these are all our post-World War II international frameworks, Bretton Woods agreements that created the World Bank, the IMF, certainly. And so the World Bank is closely related to the United Nations, is a UN-affiliated organization. And the real question now is, how well-suited are these institutions for the challenges that we see in the 21st century?
And what's the structure of the World Bank? I suppose it's because it's called a bank because you're dealing with money that is lent to countries, to municipalities, to local places. How does that work?
So the World Bank is actually has different institutions within the World Bank Group. The International Bank for Reconstruction and Development is probably the best known. And this is precisely that function of lending to governments for major public efforts and public works. And so a government may agree with the World Bank on a 5-year strategy to improve its educational system, to improve its health system, to improve roads and transport. And so the bank will, and its specialists will go in and start looking at what are some options to improve secondary education if that's the issue in that particular country. So a lot of education experts. Or improve interurban transport. You need transport specialists. Or shift towards renewable energy. You need energy experts. So there's always a dialogue going on between the World Bank and the governments and the country clients, which is what we would call them. And within that dialogue, it's very clear that this is financing two countries that then has to be repaid. And so in a sense, it's the government's funds that are just being lent to them by the World Bank, which is really a cooperative. The bank is a cooperative of about 160 different countries. Each country has a stake in the governance of the World Bank.
Does each country of the 140 countries?
Exactly. I'm not sure. I'd have to look it up. But it's about 140, 160 countries.
Okay. Yeah. Do all those countries put money into the World Bank, or is the U.S. in effect the really big player here?
So the United States, along with many of the OECD countries or developed countries, are definitely major investors in the World Bank, but largely through the International Development Agency. I think it's association, IDA, we usually call it for short. And it's this AIDA replenishment, this AIDA funding that comes from the richer countries and is earmarked only for the poorest countries. And so when we worked in Peru, when I worked in Peru, Peru was no longer one of the least developed countries, would not be AIDA eligible. When I worked in Bangladesh, Bangladesh was an AIDA country, would have, and essentially the AIDA terms are much more beneficial than the IBRD terms in terms of financing.
Tell us what AIDA means again.
International Development Association.
All right. And the kind of work that you did with the World Bank, what were some of the problems that you would see? You would arrive, you always lived in the capital city of a country, correct?
Correct.
And so again, it's Honduras, Bolivia, Peru, Bangladesh,
Kenya,
and you're in those capital cities where your office happens to be. And so you have people going out to the field, so to speak, and figuring out what people need for infrastructure. Now, you mentioned electricity, you mentioned safe cooking. What are some of the other problems they come across?
Certainly any number of infrastructure, water supply, sanitation, are huge challenges still in many places.
You're talking about not having indoor plumbing, for instance?
Absolutely.
Is that typical?
Absolutely. I would consider one of the more important contributions I was able to make when I was in Africa was helping with the team that I was a part of, certainly, in shifting the focus to rural sanitation. In many countries, open defecation is still an issue, still widely practiced to differing extents, and that clearly has an impact on public health. And so how do you make visible a largely invisible challenge to government leaders who may be sitting in the capital, who may be living in modern structures, to be able to point this out and see the ramifications on public health, on stunting, on infant mortality, because of lack of good sanitation and good sanitary practices?
We're talking about sustainable energy across the world this evening on Lehigh Valley Discourse. My guest, Glenn Pierce, has years of experience in this field. We're going to take a break at this point, Glenn. Hang in there, folks. This is John Pierce, Lehigh Valley Discourse. We will be back in just a moment.
For program support on WDIY, we thank the Pocono Cheesecake Factory, now offering curbside pickup of a variety of cheesecake, cookies, pastries, and gourmet treats. For 35 years, helping schools, clubs, and other nonprofit organizations throughout the Lehigh Valley and Northeast Pennsylvania achieve their fundraising goals. The Pocono Cheesecake Factory, since 1985, love at first bite. For more information, PoconoCheesecake.com.
Galactic Travels brings you hour-long soundscapes of electronic, ambient, and space music. That's Thursday night at 11, right here on WDIY Allentown, Lehigh Valley Public Radio, 88.1 FM and WDIY.org. Many choices, real voices.
Welcome back to Lehigh Valley Discourse. I'm your host, John Pierce, and my guest this evening, Glenn Pierce, my son, who wandered away from the Lehigh Valley. Glenn, you didn't see fit to stay around here after your formative years. By the age of 18, you were gone. And you started off in college, and then you have your career now. And in fact, you used to work for the World Bank. And you no longer do, but you are now living in Vienna, Austria, and getting a large taste of Mozart and fine music and so on, and great chocolates. And how about the beers? Do we throw those in there too?
Sure.
For Vienna? And you are now working with a Sustainable Energy for All, it's called. So your big emphasis is on sustainable energy. And you've been talking about the 17 Sustainable Development Goals. What are you working on right now?
So a bit of background on Sustainable Energy for All. Sustainable Energy for All was created first as a United Nations initiative by then Secretary General Ban Ki-moon. It was spun outside of the United Nations with the help of the World Bank. We're now an independent international organization based in Vienna, Austria, as you mentioned. The purpose of SE for All, as we call ourselves, is really to focus exclusively on Sustainable Development Goal 7, SDG 7. Make sure that we are doing as much as possible to be able to influence global agendas, to be able to interact with different governments, to be able to identify opportunities for policy reform, for improved financial flows, to the targets of SDG 7. And so this requires, on one level, a lot of global engagement. So, for example, we just recently finished advising the G20 presidency this year, in 2020, which was with the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia, which required a lot of effort on our part and on my part to engage with different officials from the different G20 countries, all around energy access. And the play from our side, certainly, is if we can get energy access, if you remember the numbers I mentioned, 800 million without access to electricity, 2.8 to 4.4 billion without access to clean cooking, if we can get these 20 countries to focus and prioritize on what's needed still for energy access, then that's certainly part of what we're willing to do. We're trying to raise the political profile of SDG 7. And I heard something extremely, I think, meaningful. I'll share two meaningful reflections. One was earlier when I was invited to speak in Beijing at the invitation of the government of China, a large conference focused on Africa. They certainly were interested in our perspective. And in China, they certainly have just, I would say, relatively recently, finished providing access to electrification to all Chinese population. And so they perhaps did that at turn of the century, late 90s. They were able to get to 100% access to electricity.
Wow, that is fantastic for China,
sure,
such a huge
sure.
country.
And one of the Chinese officials, when he was explaining their approach, and giving an example of a very small town in China, central China, did not have electricity. 20 years later, it had electricity and is now the world's largest producer of guitars.
Oh, my goodness.
If you can imagine that. And he said, we realized no energy, no jobs, no development. As simple as that. And we take that for granted, I think, quite often in Lehigh Valley and
absolutely
and environs.
We have all the energy we need. And nowadays, with the pandemic, we don't necessarily have all the jobs we need. But problems around the world are just stunning to us.
And this is the second morsel that I wanted to share, which is around the COVID-19 crisis. And the remark was made at a meeting recently. We've globally learned to live without travel. We've learned to live, hopefully, by not going to restaurants. We've learned to live more locally. We have not learned to live without energy. And so this again underscores the importance of energy, of sustainable energy, not only for our own economic development and future, but clearly for the world's health in terms of what we can do to minimize climate change.
Now, through the years of experience with working in different countries, your task has been in part to meet with local authorities, mayors of towns, perhaps school boards. But How do you negotiate that? What's the best way of approaching folks you're trying to help, and yet I assume your attitude is not Big Brother is here to save you?
So it's interesting because so many of the interactions that I've had depend on what objective is trying to be reached. It depends on the context, who I'm representing. Depends on who certainly the interlocutor is and what type of influence or what type of decision-making that counterpart may have. And I think it's important also to recognize the different ways of doing development. I recognized early on, I would say, that I wanted to do something important, helpful, in development between countries, which is how my career path has evolved. But there are many different ways of doing development. So you have NGOs and foundations, for example, a lot of charities that go out, you know, will put all their efforts into
religious groups
that pulled all their efforts into building a well, an irrigation system. And there's space for that. That's very important work that's needed. That's oftentimes unidirectional, one-way directional. It's the church group, it's the foundation or NGO that has the idea that's going out and trying to see where that idea can fit. And if you put yourself on the other side of the table as a recipient community, your list of problems and challenges may be 1 to 100. Someone offers you help on, you know, challenge number 32, you're going to take it.
All right.
You're going to take it. Another way of doing development is what bilateral aid agencies do. And I worked for several years with USAID in Honduras and in Bolivia. And the bilateral relationship is couched in geopolitics. And so it has everything to do with what the U.S.'s interest is in Central America at that time. The counterparts certainly know that this is part of a bigger discussion, dialogue that's going on. And so that relationship adjusts for that reality. And I'd like to say that, at least certainly when I worked in USAID, we did our best to open a two-way dialogue. When push comes to shove, it will be the way USAID is interested in moving things forward.
And let's mention that USAID is Agency for International Development. And that's a U.S. program.
Correct.
Similar to what the World Bank does.
Well, I'm getting to that difference, that very important difference, which is that the international finance institutions or development finance institutions or multilateral development banks, places like the World Bank, the Asian Development Bank, Inter-American Development Bank, the European Bank for Reconstruction and Development, all these banks have a different model for approaching development. In my view, they are probably the financiers that are most careful at wanting to look at the sustainability of their investments. And so the amount of dialogue and exchange with country clients, with government decision makers, is exponentially higher than it is with other approaches. And so the banks are talking incessantly to ministries of finance, are looking at the capacity of indebtedness in that particular country, are trying to really help figure out how can these large public works that I mentioned earlier, how they can be financed without being too onerous on the government's bottom line or on the government's budget. And that's not easy. But there is a prolonged effort at identifying, preparing, developing projects that correspond to certain regulations, certain standards, certain environmental and social protection approaches or best practices. In fact, we at the bank, we used to have something that was very difficult. You can see where this comes from. The United States because it's part of the World Bank, as I mentioned earlier, would insist on certain environmental regulations as if other countries would have the capacity of carrying those out like the United States.
Yes, I can see that.
And that's a false assumption. because you're assuming that institutions are operating the same way. You're assuming that the citizenry is as literate as it is in the United States. You're assuming that that there are efficiencies that can happen. So you consider an environmental assessment that's put out to the public for comment for 30 days. That just does not work the same way in Central African Republic or in Madagascar or in Bangladesh or in Vietnam or in Indonesia, etc. But that's what we're striving for. We're striving through the bank, and all the MDBs work more or less the same in that respect, striving to make sure that the construction of an important piece of infrastructure is environmentally and socially acceptable and safe for that community.
We have not yet talked about a subject that is rampant nowadays, and that is the situation of girls and women around the world. Do these banks get into projects that have to do specifically with how the family can improve its lot? I suppose, in a general sense, if you're talking about sustainable energy, that covers all of us, men and women. What about problems that are particular to girls and women?
So I would say, in my experience, certainly, I talked about open defecation. I talked about lack of sanitary practices. We cannot appreciate necessarily, especially as men, what that means for a woman who maybe has to feed her, watch what she eats or drinks in the evening, because there's nowhere safely to be able to use a toilet. So many women develop bladder infections and bladder problems because they're trying to hold in their urine, or they're avoiding having to go.
Because they don't have indoor plumbing.
They would have to go outdoors in the dark.
At night. Right.
They can be exposed to violence. So that's a very good example of why the gendered approach needs to be included in how we think about projects, how we think about solutions. The clean cooking fatalities. Guess who it is? It's mostly women and children.
Right.
So I wonder oftentimes how different these challenges would be if we had more women decision makers globally and in countries than we do today. And perhaps we would have solutions by now.
Glenn Pierce has been my guest this evening on Lehigh Valley Discourse. Believe it or not, Glenn, our time is up. And so I thank you for coming by. We happened to get a visit from Glenn. He lives in Vienna, Austria now, with family. And let's give a shout out to your wife and your two children. They're 20 years old and 18 years old now, Maureen and Doña Nora and Sebastian. A lovely family. And let me say that with all of what you've done professionally, Glenn, the best thing that I know about you is that you are a great family man. So thanks for coming.
Thanks, John. It was very nice. I enjoyed it very much.
Excellent. Excelente. Let me tell you folks, too, that it's been unusual for Glenn and me to talk to each other for a half hour in English, because we communicate in Espanol. Gracias, Glenn.
De nada.
And dear listeners, so glad to have you with us. Thank you for tuning in to Lehigh Valley Discourse. I'm John Pierce, your host. Until we meet again, remember to be gentle with your neighbor.